Welcome to Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon, a production of iHeartRadio. Sports fans, golf fans, or just fans, welcome to another Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon. It's not Max Homa this week. Max could not do the podcast. Things happen when you're a professional golfer. So who do we call in? Well, Joel Damon, who just played unbelievably well at the PGA Championship. And Joel, I know you've done a lot of podcasts. I just listened to No Laying Up's podcast that you did a couple weeks ago. If people haven't listened to it, a great listen. But, buddy, this isn't me asking you questions. You're a co-host of this thing. This is kind of your first real venture into the media world.
I'm nervous. I tweeted I'm nervous. I texted Max. I said, how do I do this? This is not an interview. This is complete co-hosting. And I was super prepared, just flew in home, Scottsdale. I was writing things down on my notes, on my iPad, and I came up with like two notes. So this is
two's more than Max.
And I hope I can't screw it up, right?
No, it's, I mean, if you're terrible, it'll just, there's always next week, you know, and Max will be back and he'll basically critique everything you did. I did have a Max request to ask you, and I want to ask it to you first since you're a little uncomfortable. I figured I'd make you a lot more uncomfortable. This was the one Max request for the pod. He said, you know, Joel's an unbelievably humble golfer. He's a humble guy. He said, I need you to ask him to spend 60 to 90 seconds talking about how good he is at golf. And so I want you to start and explain to the world how good you are at golf, because I was just diving into your finishes this year. And I feel like I didn't realize how many great finishes you've had, including obviously Harding Park. So the floor is yours. Let's tell the world how good you are, what you do unbelievably well, and why you're one of the best players in the world. Go.
I am good at golf. I can't even lie anymore at this point. I can't hide it. I'm just so excited. I hit the ball super straight. I don't hit it very far, but I hit it really straight. I hit it solid. My iron game is strong. When I chip and putt well is when you see me on the leaderboard. I don't have to chip too often, so I just have to be serviceable at it. And if my putting is decent, it's good. So this week, I had both my coaches. I know that's when you know you're good, when you have two coaches. But Robert Shell, I work with a ton here at TPC Scottsdale, and we just did a simple setup change with putting, and I believe my ball is going to go in the hole this week, and it went in. And I played great golf. This might have been my best four rounds of golf I've played. I had ball stuck in the tree on Thursday, and I made triple on Friday without penalty strokes, and without that I am sniffing very high up that leaderboard. So I'm good at golf. I think I'm slowly believing it. And I'm looking forward to when I tee it up next.
Yeah, so I tweeted out something. Now, I want to ask about your attitude on the golf course, because I do feel like you come off, at least on TV, as a guy that's having fun being a professional golfer, which not everybody does that. And that is a skill, I guess, you know, if you're a positive person playing. I tweeted something out about how I just smile when you're on coverage. Every time you come on, it just makes me smile. Maybe it's the hat occasionally. You have a mustache that may or may not be a questionable decision, something Max does as well. I had a mustache during quarantine. My wife did not like it at all, and it was an immediate shave. But you come on TV. Even on Sunday, they showed you on one. I think you birdied one, didn't you? Did you make like a 15, 20-footer on one on the final round?
Was that Saturday?
When you made that? Okay.
I think you tweeted Saturday.
Yeah, and you had a great reaction. But on Friday, I was talking you up, and then you make triple on the ninth, and that was the moment where I said, I really would like to play Harding Park. I don't think I want to play the ninth hole. It seemed like that hole was the one that was just kicking everybody's ass all week.
It's the most simple hole if you look at it from the tee or overhead, whatever. It's just straight, it's long, and it's simple. There's no like the green's back to front. It's 505 yards. The wind's off the left, and hit two good golf shots and you two putt, no problem. If you had two great golf shots, you might have a chance of birdie. But it's just like straight major championship, kick you right in your teeth, and you don't have a choice. And it's it looks easy. It should be easy, but hitting the left or off, a lot of people go left or off because there's bunkers on the right. The bunkers are gettable because they're kind of flat. They're very, fair to the amateurs or everyday players, I would say. So you can hit in those bunkers and they're firm, so you can hit it out towards the green, no problem. But everyone wants to go left, and when you get in that hay, at you know, then all of a sudden you're 210 out, and you're trying to hack it out of the hay, and it doesn't end up well. But it's like on Sunday I smoked the drive. I had 6-iron in to a gettable pin, and Saturday as well. I think I hit 5-iron in there. So it's not a birdie hole per se, but if you hit the fairway, it is playable. But if you don't hit the fairway, numbers add up really fast.
So you finished T10th at the PGA Championship, all four rounds in the 60s. I mentioned the No Layup podcast you did with Solly, which was great. You said something in there that I was very interested in asking about. Now, you said that it's been important to your year that you don't freak out when you see your name on a leaderboard. And this is any leaderboard, and this is any event you're playing. What's it like for you when you see your name on a major championship leaderboard? What was going through your mind as you continued to kind of move up that on Friday and Saturday and into Sunday?
That's a good question. Rory said something, Rory McIlroy. There's only one Rory on tour. A lot of people get confused. There's Rory Sabatini and Rory McIlroy.
So what do you call Sabatini to distinguish him?
His name is Sabo. There's one Rory on tour, and it's Rory McIlroy. Sabo does not get the distinction of Rory. That just doesn't count. So you have Sabo, and you have Rory, and Rory is the better one and the best one and the awesome one. So I want to clear that up for the public out there. But Rory said in an interview, this is where I go rambling. This is what Max told me about. He goes, you're going to start rambling. You're going to lose your train of thought. He goes, just own it. Just go with it. So Max, shout out. This is my rambling moment. This is fucking hilarious. Can I cuss on here, by the way?
Yeah, of course, of course.
Rory said, without the fans, like every event feels the same, where the memorial should feel bigger than Hilton Head and their Traveler Clubbers. And this week felt different. The first, like fans, no fans, like the build out is bigger. You know, you just like, there's cameras more, there's just everything just bigger. And it felt that way. So, and it like, it's more fun to play that way. Like you can kind of lull yourself into sleep a little bit, maybe without fans. It's easy to kind of get to, you know, just kind of go about hole by hole and kind of lose track of what's going on. But this definitely felt like a major. The golf course was a major championship golf course. And it definitely felt that way. So when I started creeping up that board, and especially Friday afternoon, I was playing great. But I expect myself there. I have earned my right to be a top 10. Well, now I'm 59th in the world. I have earned my right there. Like no one has given this to me. I deserve being in majors. I deserve to be in WGCs. I am now creeping, you know, steadily up that ranking. So, and no one gave it to me. Like I've played my way into that role. So I have to also believe that I deserve that. And that's been, when I saw my name, kind of, I was like, this feels kind of comfy. This feels pretty fun. Like I should do this more often. And I believe like I didn't, when you play great, it always feels easy. But like I said, I mean, I had a ball in the tree and a triple. And other than that, I mean, I was right there and it felt pretty comfy. I felt like I'm kind of going in the right direction.
Yeah. I mean, it's gotta, you know, for somebody like you who I think has openly, and I think this is why people like you, and I think it's why people like Max, is you guys aren't scared to just talk honestly about your life, your struggles, the things that are going through your head during a tournament. You know, it is a very human approach to being a professional athlete, which is a very cool thing to be. I mean, being a PGA Tour player is what you've always wanted to be, and now you are. But, you know, I think about some of the stuff you've said in interviews. I read the Golf Digest interview you did with Max Adler, which was great last year, and of course the podcast. And what it feels like to me is every event you've played well in, it basically builds you up to a point where you get to a PGA Championship, and instead of being like, oh shit, I'm in a major and I'm playing well, what you said earlier is, oh, wow, I'm in a major, I'm playing well, as I should. How weird is that going through your brain now, maybe compared to 2 or 3 years ago, considering, you know, it took a little bit of time to get into the club and to feel comfortable in the club?
Yeah, I looked at my wife today. We were I bought a Fiji water today, and I looked at my wife and I said, can you believe I'm buying Fiji water where 3 years ago we couldn't even get Crystal Geyser?
this is a main theme of our podcast. I'm so proud of you for bringing this up. Now I got to find out where you are on the Aon Risk Reward Challenge, and then we'll be all set.
You know that Nick Taylor already wrapped that up, by the way?
I got a brutal email today. I haven't sent it to Homa. I didn't want to break. I didn't want to, you know, he locked it up.
After whatever it was last week, was it what was before? You locked it up in.
It was before the WGC, right? He locked it up. I mean, basically leaving.
Yeah,
Ohio,
no, he locked it up at WGC when he birdied Thursday, Friday on the 16th hole. The guy just clipped off $1 million, and I asked him about it, and he didn't even care. And I say that because he's a humble, nice guy. He's like, "Oh yeah, like that was cool." I'm like, "Dude, you just won $1 million because you played a random golf hole pretty well throughout the year. Like that's comical."
A lot of random golf holes that you didn't even know was going on. I got a note, and I need to dive into it and make sure that I'm saying this correctly. But it was a scenario type of format, almost like you get those printout sheets for the tour championship. And Bryson's 10 that he made, where he kept hitting those balls out of bounds,
may have cost him
$1 million. People don't understand that if he would have made bogey, he would have had a real chance at the Aon Risk Reward Challenge, and he made 10 and it ruined his average. So that thing we all watched online and it got 1 million views and it was funny and the ruling and all that, that might have cost Bryson some coin, which, I mean, maybe it doesn't matter to Bryson, but hey, $1 million is $1 million.
All right, Shane, you're caddying for Bryson DeChambeau. You know that he's got to make a 6 or less to keep himself in this Aon Risk. Are you telling him to chip out? Like, do you get 10%? Is that a January 1 or whatever you negotiate contracts with caddies, are you saying I get 10% of the Aeon? You get 10% of the FedEx Cup? Like, are you making him chip out on the 15th hole at Memorial so he keeps the Aeon intact?
So it's not a Steve Williams, I have one ball in the bag at Pebble Beach and Tiger's leading by 10 moment, but it's close for me. So, I mean, I might just lean on the, you know, it's tough to turn this over out of this stuff, man. This rough's kind of thick. Why don't you just... What if we punch 6 out, we make 5, and we'll be good to go? I think I would have tried to go as close to 10 cup as possible without actually breaking the clubs.
Dude, that could have been, if you're a 10%er, that was $100,000 chip out for Tim Tucker. And now Tim gets paid pretty well, because he should, because that's the old price every week. But holy cow. That is really funny to me that the back end of this Aeon thing actually came down to multiple moments. And Nick... Apparently, when Nick made his like tap in birdie putt on at Memphis in St. Jude, he gave a really solid fist pump towards his caddy, and I think they had a nice celebratory moment. I don't think he played very well, but can you imagine just clipping off $1 million because you played a random hole multiple times throughout the year? I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Maybe if you were a little bit more focused on Aeon and what they were doing, you would know. I think maybe you just let it slip out of your focus for just a bit. I wanted to ask you a PGA Championship question on two sides. The first one is, did you have a moment at any point during the week where you thought, holy shit, I might win this thing?
Yes.
Where was it?
Right before I made triple at 9. No.
right before my 7 was when it was flowing just right through my brain. That's pretty good.
That's a great question. I don't know if the listeners can hear this, but this is a White Claw that just cracked. Got to get through me. You know, we got another couple minutes here. Oh, shit. We have like 45 minutes to go. This is going to be great. I thought when I teed it up, I played great in Memphis. I played better than I finished. You know, I finished, I think, 20th there, but I played better than that. And I thought coming in this week, I drove the ball unbelievable Tuesday, Wednesday, had my coach around, and he was pumping me up and, you know, won a couple bucks in the practice rounds, which never happens. I'm a terrible practice round player. So I was feeling pretty good. And, I really thought that I was going to be in contention this week. But there was a moment, I think, there's 2 moments. Friday, I was just cruising around, clipping them off, you know, bogey free cruising. And I thought, man, I'm going to really be around this thing late on Sunday. And then I made triple. And then on Saturday, I was cruising around pretty patient and I made eagle on 10, hit two great shots and made about a 25 footer. I'm like, I think I was one back at the time, but knowing I needed to get double digits, but I was like, holy cow, I got 26 holes to play and I am right here in the thick of it. And, there was a moment for sure. I thought that, I was going to get interviewed by Amanda Balionis, who's now a friend, I would say a friend of the pod, but this isn't my pod. So
today it is.
I was going to be interviewed and, Jim Nance was going to say my name and it'd be really cool.
And then was there a moment where you said to yourself, all right, I'm probably not going to win this. Was it, where was that moment?
When I striped it down the middle on Sunday, I was pumped up. I don't get too pumped up. I try to be very neutral. But the insides are always moving and working. And I smoked a drive down one on Sunday and I really thought I was going to shoot 5 or 6 under and just, you know, post early and let everybody else, you know, kind of
try to catch you,
and see my number. Right. Exactly. And I had 79 yards on one and I hit it about 65 right in the bunker. And I go, that was maybe the worst shot of the event. It was comically bad. Hit an average bunker shot and lipped out the putt. And I said, okay, well, I'm not winning anymore. Let's just go make money at this point. And, worked out okay. Obviously, I mean, it was still, I had to be super patient on Sunday, but as soon as I hit that shot on one, the second shot on one that went in the bunker, I go, well, I'm not winning, but we can move on from here. Maybe it was like maybe me, like, you know, self-centering, like getting back to where I'm comfortable, make a bogey early, don't panic. But this is more your comfort zone.
Here's where you need to be. This is what you want to do. You know what? We'll hit it close on one at Wingfoot on Sunday when we get to the US Open. We'll save it for that. You know, one thing that there was kind of a conversation during the telecast throughout the week, and I didn't really get a full explanation. So I wanted to ask somebody that played, why were the greenside bunkers so much tougher than they are typically on tour? Because it felt like you guys were having more trouble either spinning it or getting it close than what we see, you know, kind of week in and week out on a regular tour event.
That's a great question. Well done. You must be a member of the media. I would say there's just not as much sand. We're used to a bunch of sand. I wouldn't say beach-esque, like it's more compact than like a beach you go to and play volleyball at, but
you play a lot of volleyball?
I think I'm good at volleyball. I liked playing volleyball. I'm just not as good as I think I am. Okay, so that's a problem. Because I talk a big game and I get there and I just not that good. I really think I can block, but I just not tall enough and I don't jump high enough.
Can you get both hands above the net though? Like, I mean, if you're going to block somebody, you have enough hops to get up there.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Oh yeah. I can do it. I mean, back in my heyday, you know, I'm 32 now. Back when I was good, I was up there.
You're athletic. You're more Akawa years. You were just like, just blocking everybody.
No one had a chance against me. Like if I was a one man wall, like you couldn't even, I didn't need two man blocking. I was 2-on-2 beach volleyball. You couldn't get past me. But at my old age now, just don't play as much. Not quite jumping as high. I get fingertips, but I make sure the ball isn't driven straight in my partner's face. But just not as good as I used to be.
I mean, that's what we're all looking for. I had a run. I was living in Old Town Scottsdale back when everybody lived in Old Town Scottsdale. You know, when you're like mid 20s. And I was living at one of the three.
Are you still there?
No, I live. I've got like a family now. You know, I live in Arcadia. It's like I moved out of the hustle and bustle of Old Town. You know, it's all that. And so I was living in one of about three apartment complexes that everybody lived in. That was in the central of Old Town, and they had a volleyball court there. We would play a lot, just like you. I thought I was really good. We joined a volleyball league at Pranksters 2, which is a very sketchy sports bar. Just south of Old Town Scottsdale that has volleyball courts outside. And we accidentally signed up for the A-League. And let me just tell you, you don't want to play in the A-League in anything. You don't want to play A-League volleyball. You probably don't want to play A-League pickup basketball. And we...
A-League softball is no chance.
Oh, no chance. All these guys are college baseball players. But I knew we were in serious trouble when the first game we played, the person by the net was doing the signaling to the server.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it was. I'm a little more casual than that.
That's like that's Olympic ask right there. That is, you know, one or two, which side to serve to. That's just not beyond anything we got.
We didn't win a game. We pretty much got steamrolled. We begged the pranksters committee to put us down to at least the B level one, and they said they didn't have any room. So we just had to play these people and get smoked. But not great at the volleyball. Really, can I tell you this? I just played in the Arizona Open, missed the cut. No big deal. I'm having a bunker issue right now. I can't get the ball out of the bunkers. I feel like I'm playing Harding Park bunkers.
That's exactly. So there's no sand in Harding Park bunkers. And by no sand, I mean, it's probably still better than most munis. but we're used to be able to dig a little bit. And this one, you have to get super steep on. And we're used to using a bounce a ton, which is the bottom of the wedge, which most amateurs don't use. That's what you bounce into the ball. So we had to get the leading edge into the ground, which we're not used to, change the styles a little bit. And you'd see a lot of guys hit them long, basically, or be super protective of sculling it or bouncing into it. So you'd leave it short. And I don't know. It's weird. Like, I think Max changed his wedge this week. Actually, he changed the bounce on his wedge. He got a different wedge with a different grind to make sure that he can get out of these bunkers. And I think a lot of guys were kind of surprised by it. So, it's interesting because the bunkers are normally, well, especially with the rough this week, it was a safe spot, but normally it's a great spot to go into, but no one was eating up and down the bunkers. So it was kind of a nice to have them as a hazard, I would say, versus every week's almost perfect and you just clip them out and the ball spins right next to the hole. I think it added a great little element because the other thing is off the tee, a lot of times it run through the bunker, which is super nice for us. But I think bunkers should be more penalizing overall as a whole. And this week, they were.
It just felt like nobody was hitting it close. I mean, it wasn't that you couldn't get it, you know, you'd hit it 8 feet or you'd hit it 10 feet. But to your point, it seems like every week on tour, it's either they go in or they're, you know, their tap-in distance. And that was interesting. I mean, Dustin, you know, I mean, obviously you weren't watching, but Dustin, a couple times on the back nine on Sunday, I mean, he's playing, you know, he's playing 30 feet away from the hole out of a bunker. I mean, again, this is stuff you just don't typically see. And I wanted to ask you about Harding Park specifically, but, you know, I was on the Shotgun Start on Saturday night as like a recap podcast. And I said, I'm not sure if Harding Park felt like the easiest hard course for a major or the hardest easy course, because I've seen the stats, I've seen the scoring averages, you know, lowest scoring in the history of a PGA championship on Sunday, but it never felt like it was easy. You know, I mean, there was always those holes where, to your point, you know, you make a triple, you got out of position, you know, Rory did the same thing. Rory reels off all these birdies in a row and then he makes a triple and it kind of derails his championship. I felt like there were those holes out there. And a lot of the time when it's a birdie fest major, you don't ever see guys make big numbers, you know?
Yeah, you're correct. I think it's the easiest, hardest course ever, because if you drive it well, the fairways were narrowed up. Like, you had to hit some nice tee balls to be in the fairway, no doubt. Like, even like the straight, quote unquote, easy driving holes. I think it's seven. Like, a lot, everybody laid up on. It's a short. They made a drivable, I think, on Friday, maybe Saturday. But otherwise, you hit like a 225, 250 ball, whatever it is out there. Most people miss that fairway because it is super narrow with a 4-iron hybrid 3-wood, whatever you're hitting. It is really narrow to hit that spot. So people don't, and then the rough is just tough enough where they also, then all of a sudden they, I think the PGA maybe sets up the best major. I can't talk quite enough. I mean, this is my fourth one. I think I played. The only one I haven't played is the Masters, but they set it up. They don't care about par. They don't care who wins. They just set it up to be kind of fun and fair. And it was really cool to see the back nine yesterday. Every pin was accessible from the fairway. The only one that wasn't was 11. It was a tough par three downwind. Like, you had to play smart. And every other hole, you could absolutely stuff it on from the fairway. And it couldn't. They were just setting it up. Like, Colin Morikawa hooping, making eagle on 16. Like, that was perfectly designed for that. You know, Ryan Palmer, I think, finished like 4 under his last five. It was perfectly designed. It's kind of like the Masters on Sunday, where, you know, you want somebody to shoot 30 on the back nine. That's what the PGA did. And they did a great job of that, where you have to take your medicine. Like, there's a gauntlet. 8 through, like, 13 is so hard. And you got to kind of, like, they give you 10 on par 5, which is reachable. But everything is so set up so well, and it's so fair. Because if you hit good golf shots, you can hit the close to the hole, and the greens aren't that severe, so you can make birdies. But if you're out of position, you have no chance, which I think is just a great setup. And that's why you probably saw an absolutely stacked leaderboard on Sunday, ton of great players, and a exciting finish. Unfortunately, like, at one point I was like, man, there's going to be a 9-way playoff to win this thing. And then Colin did Colin. He chipped in and he made eagle, which is exactly how it was set up to be on 16. It was just great.
You birdie 18. Did you guys say something? I had some people tweeting at me that did you yell something out? What happened there? Walk us through the birdie and the reaction.
I don't know how many people actually listen to this pod. It could be 7. It could be 7 million. I'm not sure. But if someone has a clip of the audio on 18th hole, please tweet it at me, Shane, Max, somewhere along this pod. It's Max. He's going to hate me, but my wife and I just bought a second house.
Okay.
It's a great, it's an investment property, as I like
to say. Wow. So, now look at you, but, all professional.
I know.
Look at you.
If you Google Arizona real estate, you need two properties via mogul. So my wife and I are now real estate moguls here in Arizona. We laughed about it because 3 years ago we couldn't even have a freaking pancake in her house. So golf is great. This is a wise investment. This is not like overreaching and like buying like a Porsche or Ferrari thing. This is strictly investment,
which you also thing. Bought, but, no big deal, but yeah, go ahead.
No. We do have two cars now instead of one, which is a big deal. But we bought this house, but now we have to redesign it. Lana, my wife, is super great at redesigning houses, and kind of jokingly, Mike Hattie and I, Gino, my best friend, we like, all right, this is for the new pool. This is for a new kitchen. This is for, like, we start adding them up, and my wife's an incredible chef and she loves to cook, and I want this kitchen to be unbelievable. So when I hooped it on 18, like 15, probably 20 footer, I think he started, you get a new stove, you get it. And we were just laughing because that's actually what
it's funny. Cause it's true. It's what you're saying. It's a great joke because it's really going to be a great kitchen. And you just got to upgrade the appliances. I didn't, what's sad is I feel like we watched the birdie and I don't remember it. I mean, obviously I knew you were excited, and I know you're one of those guys that has always been open about, hey man, I check how much money I made. I check how much money that birdie was worth. I've always felt like I would have been the same way. It's just, I feel like it's a human action, right? I mean, what did I make with that birdie? What was it worth? I mean, that would be something I feel like I would be following week in and week out. And it's also something golf fans have asked for years if players actually do. And it seems like they probably do it more than they say they do.
Every player, I don't care how wealthy you are. I mean, you can be Phil. I think Tiger's, it's interesting. You get to a point of like, oh, like you, like a win would change your legacy. Like if DJ won another major, it would kind of maybe change his Hall of Fame career. If, you know, Phil wins another major, it changes. If Tiger, you know, he's chasing all time greatest stuff. If I win a golf tournament, it doesn't change anything I do except I get a huge paycheck and I get a trophy. Like it doesn't change my legacy. It doesn't change my career. It doesn't all make me Hall of Famer. You know, you got guys like when you got like Rahm and Ricky and JT and Spieth and that whole thing, you're talking like changing or talking about like historic perspective.
Right.
Right. Like you have all those guys that like it completely changes maybe how you're viewed. And for me, it would just be like, oh man, you just got a massive check and a big ass trophy. Like high five. Like it doesn't really change anything for me. So, I mean, maybe I get crazy hot or crazy good and somehow I win a bunch. I don't know. That seems also silly. So for me, it is just, it's just like,
it's a work.
Just, it's just cool. It's just, it's whipped cream on top of ice cream. Like, I don't know. How much better can you get?
We're going to take a quick break and be right back. again, you were a talking point during the telecast on Friday because, again, you were playing so well and you're moving up the leaderboard. But I've seen this a couple times now. You've been doing this thing where you change your hats during the round. Is it mid-round hat changing?
Well, the biggest one was when I was losing to Max at Wells Fargo. But it was like briefly rained and got windy, and the bucket hat is just not great in the wind, obviously. And it's not great. It's actually not bad with the rain. But for this week, it was just cold. And the bucket hat just feels like a warm weather thing. And for me, I can't put on the bucket if it's cold. If I'm wearing a sweater, I shouldn't wear the bucket. It just doesn't quite work out. I'm the bucket hat guy. I got a great deal with MD Anderson. You can go online to my website or any of my social media profiles and buy the bucket hat, by the way. And is that a free ad? Are those allowed?
Yeah, I'll just when we get done, just Venmo me $10,000 and then we'll be good. Then that's fine.
That's a lot. I'll just have you over for a drink.
What do you think your high? What's the most you've ever Venmoed, if you don't mind sharing? Is it a ridiculous amount or is it a sensible amount?
No, well, Venmo has a $3,000 limit.
We don't know that. us regular humans don't know the limit on Venmo.
They actually upped it from $3,000 to $5,000 during quarantine because so many people were getting paid for Venmo. So when I played well, I paid Gino all the way with Venmo only, exclusively through the Corn Ferry or Web at the time. And there was a couple of weeks where it was more, so he had to kind of wait a little. Like, so you pay $3,000 for the week, and then you have to wait another 7 days before you can pay again. So there was when we exceeded the Venmo limit, we were excited and super super pumped. But I'm a real big fan of cash, and Venmo is not real money. I'm gonna die on this hill that Venmo is not real money.
I'm with you on this. Nothing drives me more insane than when you win a golf bet and the person says, "Can I Venmo it to you?" Like, just have $100 in your wallet.
Strictly cash.
Thank you.
95% of us, 99.9% of us, never play for more than $100. Like, that'd be a terrible day at the golf course. Even us pros, like, it just doesn't happen often that we play for enough money. And if you Venmo me, that is horse poo and BS and provide cash. Now, if you're playing with Phil and Charlie Hoffman and Xander and that whole crew, Max, sometimes I heard that he maybe clipped Phil recently, but they provide cash. So I think that any golf bet within reason should be cash and should be paid over a beer going over the scorecard on the 19th hole.
I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. It drives me absolutely nuts, especially to your point when it's like a $25 bet you won. You're like, you don't have $25. You have to Venmo me.
So Venmo me $25. Absolutely.
Yeah. So now my move is if you're a constant Venmoer to me, I will Venmo you back with my cash out just to prove to you that I'm not up on this game. Like, if you're a friend of mine that's always Venmoing me, you're getting Venmoed back as I'm tipping, you know, the bad guys that are cleaning the clubs after. I'm tipping them in cash and I'm Venmoing you because I'm sick of your Venmo shit. So guys, everybody out
100%.
There listening,
100%.
We're out on that. Stop Venmoing money. If you're a golfer, this is the only thing I ask of you besides, you know, not being a horrible person and being nice to, you know, the people that are cleaning your clubs and any beverage cart, is just have $100 on you when you can. I mean, it's not a whole bunch of money. It's not breaking the bank. Have $100. If you get a $5 bill sometime, just throw it in your golf bag. That's a nice way to have extra cash in there. And just have $100. You know, listen to Joel Damon. He tells you exactly that. So there you go. Have you played with Morikawa before? Have you had a chance to play with him?
I got lucky enough last year at Pebble Beach in the U.S. Open. I think he was still an AM that week.
He just turned pro.
That was his first pro event.
Second one. I think he played Canadian Open. That was his first pro event.
what do you like do this for a living or something? Like, how do you know everything?
We used to have the U.S. Open. Unfortunately, not anymore. But we had the U.S. Open for a while, and it was fun.
Oh yeah, I remember that one time when Fox and you and Joe Buck and all that friends and Paulie.
It was great because you got to go to Pebble and do a U.S. Open at Pebble. But you played with them. Did you play with them at Pebble or practice round or actual tournament round?
I played with them at Pebble as part of them Thursday, Friday, and. I go, Gino, man, this kid is really good, but he's got a lot to learn. Like, it'll be a couple years before he kind of figures it out. His wedges weren't great from a guy who can't hit a wedge. And his putting was suspect from a guy who can't putt. So thinking back, it's just so laughable. The guy absolutely peered it. And he was like, yeah, I mean, he's really good, but man, he's got a couple of years. And by a couple of years, I mean like a couple of days before he figured it out. So I was impressed, obviously, ball striking wise, but I really thought that he would, I don't know, need a couple years, honestly, to like dial in some wedges and like to be, he just didn't control his golf ball around the greens and short shots like apparently he does now. And now he's got to be, he's for sure top three in the world. And I think if his divisor was high enough, he would be
probably the best player in the world. Probably one. Yeah. I mean, that's you know, like Andy Johnson, the Fried Egg, sent out something today about that whole, you know, you've basically got to qualify for these points over a couple of years. And the fact that he hasn't been a pro for a couple of years hurts his world golf ranking.
Right. Until he gets to 42 events, I think his it doesn't quite work out for him. But I think he'll be number one when he hits 42 events, is my understanding.
So when you are either meeting a young aspiring pro, a great college player, you know, you're playing with a Colin Morikawa, who's, you know, this guy that you've heard about, what do you feel like as a guy that has gone through many tours and has played with just about everybody that you can play with all walks of life? You've played with the guys that you know are never going to make it. You play with the guys that you're surprised they didn't make it. You play with the guys that become superstars like Morikawa. What do you feel like is the number one thing that you and your peers, your other professionals that are on the PGA Tour, what are you looking for in a young player that maybe separates them in terms of just the eye test? What do you look for that separates them from maybe another guy you play with that you're like, he's pretty good, but I just don't see him becoming, you know, the next whatever?
That gets tough. There's a bit of an it factor that you can't put your finger on, right? It's like, well, he has it. I think of Russell Wilson all the time. Third round draft pick, quarterback for my Seahawks. Like, he was too short. He was too this. He was too that. But like, man, that guy just has it. Like, he's just a winner. I played in Scottsdale Open this year in May before we went out to, before the tour started. We're during quarantine, and I was in the final group. I played with this kid. This is terrible. I think his name's Zach Smith. Maybe his name is Zach. I think he's from Walnut Creek. He's a young kid. He played at Santa Barbara. And I shot 63 in the final round, 62 maybe. Like, I'm like, man, you have, like, I don't know. Like, it was kind of fine. And all of a sudden, like, his back was against the wall and it was on. Like, he was hooping every putt. He was hitting shots to the proper side of the green. I think it's like, it's maintaining emotions. And I think it's controlling your golf ball, but no one has control of the golf ball. It's like missing in the proper side or understanding how to play the game, like understanding like which spin to attack and which one not to, and when hit driver and when not to. And the younger you are and the better you understand that, like you're just so far out of the game. And then some guys' hearts just, I don't think Colin Morikawa's heart, he doesn't beat correctly when he's in contention. It always just slows down. I think it's like, my mind goes through the roof, like it's going to be through my chest, and most people do, but his just doesn't be, like it just kind of slows down and he gets more comfortable almost. And you see that in some spots with some guys, and missing, I would say just controlling a golf ball, but understanding missing it on the correct side and being patient. And you see that out of Colin, because he hits the ball so well, he can be more patient than everybody else, knowing that over 72 holes, his driver and his irons are going to pay off for him.
Yeah, it seems like what I'm hearing and the stuff that I'm reading about from peers and such about Morikawa is it just seems like he, and this is such a used cliche in sports, but he seems mature beyond his years. And I feel like that was such an example of a guy in that moment. And 98% of the time, when you see either a person that's not won a major, a young player in those major moments, a chance to kind of make history and join this elite, elite, elite list of these 23-year-olds that have won a major championship, we see the guys get right to the fence, but they can't jump over it. And I mean, he pole vaulted over it. You know, I mean, it was never any question that he wasn't going to do what he was going to do. Even, you know, like as a golf fan that watches a lot of golf, you know, 18, the tee shot at 18 doesn't look as easy as you guys make it seem like it is. And it was just a, you know, it was a bomb down the middle 320 for him. You know, it was like, no, there was no question that he was going to hit one right down the fairway.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, he had a miss at Colonial, right?
Yeah, just that the short miss, yeah.
That short one at sorry, my wife walked in the room and she's so beautiful. I just got blindsided.
That's okay.
It was unbelievable.
That's a sweet sentiment. Cool. She's just excited about the kitchen. Yeah.
That's funny. We had a nice high five when I got home. And that was awesome, by the way. That was, I don't know, I'm so excited. Morikawa is a freak, number one, but the tee shot on 18, the shot on 16, I think is going to go down in lower. Like, it's an easy, quote unquote, easy tee shot. And it's not like you can like have to do something cool. You just hit like a little cut for him and that's what he does. And it's all fine. But to hit it that close and hoop the putt 60, but the tee shot on 18 is easier than everyone thinks on. It looks really cool on TV. And I was saying, I was pretty nervous on 18 knowing, you know, a bogey or double would really suck, but you can send it out pretty far right in because the wind is down off the right and you can kind of peel one to the right against the wind and it'll hold up short of the bunkers, or you can kind of like send one high draw with the wind. And there's just so much room because you have to hit it so far left, like impossibly far left to hit it in the hazard. And then you have to hit it so far, the further right you hit it, the shorter the ball goes and the bunkers are totally playable. So, it looks intimidating on TV, and I was pretty nervous on that tee on Sunday. And I just said, look, Joel, if you hit it anywhere except for like duck hook left, this thing's going to be in the fairway. and I managed to heel swipe one right down the middle.
It's a real positive thought to have. Just don't duck hook it.
Well, it's just funny because I'm a toe. Right, like I hit knuckle toes, and I was like, I healed the shit out of that thing. It was such a high healer. Thankfully, went right down the middle. But that is just nice. It's an easier tee shot than you think. But it's funny. Second shot, so he fades the ball. He's got 9 iron in, and the left pin, like obviously, he's just like wipe it way right. You can get down and whatever. You can make bogey and win. And his body, when you're nervous as a fader, your body stops moving and the club has got to pass your hands and you're going to pull it.
Okay.
And that's exactly what he did on the second shot. And it ended up like static right on top of the pin. It went a little long because the ball face shuts down. It's going to hood it. It's going to go further when you pull it. And it was just kind of, it was nice to see this kid get nervous and hit a shot with the proper target, obviously everything, it worked out where he just pulled it on top of the pin and he got 20 feet. But you could tell like for sure, like if he was super nervous on that shot, because he knew if he hit that ball in the air for it, he would win a major. And he did that. But I have the same miss when I get nervous and it felt nice that the best player in the world has the same miss as me.
I asked people for some questions. I got one I want to throw at you first. This is from, by the way, this is the person's handle, which I don't know why I'm not really good friends with this person. At Golf Tacos, feel like we could be friends. Jeff, he said...
Best friends, for sure.
It's great. He said, has anybody ever confused you for another golfer while signing autographs or in a practice round, and who was the golfer that they thought you were?
Well, no one... I haven't been confused for somebody else because I think no one knows. The deal is no one knows who I am. So they don't even know. I could sign like Tom Smith and they would think it's awesome. So like me signing autographs is kind of comical because no one knows who I am. I could sign Shane Bacon and like, right, like Shane and then like draw Bacon on their hat and they'd like be super pumped.
Cool. Thanks. When's Rory coming through? Yeah.
At that point, like it just doesn't matter. People, there's very few humans who know who I am and that's just fine. But I haven't, the mustache sometime maybe was kind of different for some people and maybe the kids didn't reach out their hand so far to sign the hat. But yeah, I would just say no one knows who I am and they just, I could write anything on their, whatever they have, a flag or hat, and it doesn't matter.
Ben Opsel, I think is how you'd say it, said, have you considered any other choices in headwear, visor, fedora, the Schwartzel? I would prefer, I don't know. You in a fedora would be a look, right? It would be something.
A look would be, it would be something. I don't know. Like my, it's amazing to me. Like I wore the bucket hat for multiple years here in Scottsdale, just because the sun
is
hot
and
it's bad for you. As another podcast, Foreplay, I think is what they're Riggs at Barstool is like, can you imagine being stronger than the sun? I'm like, well, no. So well, at some point you get old enough to realize you're not stronger than the sun. You have to wear sunscreen
right.
and a hat. And for me, it was like, do I dare bring this out on tour type of thing? And at some point you kind of get comfortable and you just realize you're the same ding dong anywhere in the world you are. So if you wear it home, you wear it on tour. And for me, the visor, I can't do my hat. The hair gets too, I have a ton of hair. So I wear a normal hat sometimes too, but I think the bucket is unfortunately, I say fortunately and unfortunately, like that is my thing. I could probably get to really, really, really good in the world and I'd still be the bucket hat guy, which is just fine.
Yeah. That's, but, it's an okay, to, it's a good thing.
You've been doing the thing on Twitter, right? You've been, you have, I was almost saying like your hat of the day.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I got a lot of hats. I do have a new bucket, by the way.
You are the most, I say this and then I say like, you're the most spoiled's wrong because you've earned it. You went from blog writing by yourself to however you got your Yahoo to wherever. But you have hats from every golf course in the world that anyone ever wants to play.
Let me just, for those that have ever wondered about my hat collection, I have two rules when I play a golf course and I don't pay for the golf, which let's just say this, guys, I don't pay for a lot of golf. I mean, that just is part of the media world. It's part of pro golf. It's part of the media world. Like, we play a lot of golf, and a lot of the time it's comped. That's just how golf is. I have two rules.
All right. You can't, no one can get mad at you for that.
Yeah, I'm just, like, hey, listen, sorry. I'm not lying about it. I've never sat here and said, here's me swiping my credit card. You know, I mean, this is just, anybody you follow on Instagram that's posting at a golf course probably didn't pay for the golf. That's just a fact.
That's definitely a fact. Except for me and Bannon. I posted a Bannon, and I definitely paid there.
You paid full boat?
Oh, full boat for four of us. Me, my caddy, Rehorn, John Rehorn's head coach, Oregon State, and his Craig Welty, the son of Carl Welty, famous coach. So full boat that one. And the 3 days before me, Tony Finau and Zach Blair and crew showed up, and they were all free. And I go, man, I really haven't made it. I got to do this.
I know some people at Bannon. I'll talk to them. I'll let them know that now that you're a top 10 major championship finisher, we can maybe get that happen. My rules are, one, rule number one is if the place is allowing me to play golf for free, I'm going to buy something in the pro shop. I mean, granted, you know, I don't think, you know, a Bannon needs, you know, $30 more out of me for a hat, but it's just my way of doing something. You know, I mean, they're letting me play golf for free. I'll buy something in the shop. And it's typically a towel or a hat. I collect towels as well in terms of the golf courses. I like those. And my other thing is everybody in my group that is playing that's comped or free, if you're playing with me and you didn't have to pay for golf, everybody's got to throw the cart guys $20. So if we have four guys for free, the cart guys are going to get $80 out of us. And, you know, I worked in that position before. I scrubbed wrenches for a year at True North. I know what $80 out of one group does for the tip count. So that's my two moves.
A pile of cash for the old club club guys. Oh. Like, that's an incredible amount of money.
Yeah. So that those are my two rules. So then so back to the hat thing, that is where my hat of the day started. Was I like hats. First of all, I would buy a lot of hats, and then I just started. I was like, I got good golf courses. I might as well do this. You know, you know who Jonathan Wall is, the guy from the golf.com that does an unbelievable job with equipment?
He does equipment.
Yeah, he's a good friend of mine, and we've kind of written at the same places for years and stuff. And I think Wall's collection might be better than mine. It's subtle, of course, because he doesn't share it as much. But Wall's got some dirty, dirty golf course hats. So just know that I might be a little bit more out in front. I might be the Ricky. My clothes are brighter. The orange is brighter. His is a little more subtle, and he might beat me 3-2. That is how that might happen. A question.
All right, Jay, you have one hat to get in the U.S. What's one you don't have that you want in the States?
I don't have. I've never played Positiempo. So I would like to play Positiempo. Overrated. The course is overrated, or the logo?
Oh, if you're going logo, I don't even know what it is. I'm just saying, you have better places.
Okay, so I think MacArthur's up there for the logo. I've never played there. You know, the milk jug is pretty iconic and very cool. Yeah. That's a cool one. And then Sand Hills. I've never played Sand Hills. So those are two places that I feel like those logos are really cool. I know Tron has a Sand Hills hat and he wears it a lot, and I'm always jealous when he posts with it. So those are probably two, just because of the logo more than anything else. But you know, have you played the course in Walla Walla called Wine Valley? Have you played there before?
I have played there one time. It is, it's 90 minutes from home. So a lot of guys, like, they do a day trip and they do it overnight where the wives go and drink all the wine in Walla Walla Valley. The guys play golf. It's a great spot. I've only played there once. It was years ago. Gino Caddy absolutely loves it. It's unbelievable where you can hit it off. Like, it's a lot like Bandon, with a little more fescue, I guess. So not as friendly off the tee, but the green complexes are unbelievable. And I would suggest anyone wants a trip, you can, all the wife can drink all the wine and you can play all the golf.
Yeah, so that logo's sneaky. That's a sneaky, undersold logo. I think it's the wine corkscrew is the flag stick. And just a flag on top. That's a great logo. And again, you know, I don't always try to go with the elitist ones. You know, I want to go to some locally ones that people, anybody can go play for $80 or whatever.
Do you have a hat from Papago?
Ooh, I don't think I have a Papago hat. I need to get one. That's a good logo.
It's not bad. And I feel like you being a
you're right.
Guy, you know,
I'm actually, this is a flaw of mine. I'm not great at local hats and logos. I need to be better about that. I actually got yelled at by a certain golf course because I didn't have their pencil in my big pencil golf course display. But we're off the rails, which is a good thing. Two more questions, then we want to get to flights. You got a question from Flag Hunting. What's Joel's favorite Pacific Northwest area golf course? I'm sure you get this a lot, but I'd like to hear the answer.
Ooh, I mean, I'm super partial to Pacific. We talk about Pacific as towards the water. I'm going to say Clarkson Country Club, where I grew up, is just so good. It's tree lined, very Mesa Country Club, Arizona Country Club esque, except for dirt poor and terrible greens. Pacific Northwest, I mean, man, Pumpkin Ridge is so good, especially in the fall, the leaves change colors. Aldera is outside Seattle. It's about 30 minutes east of Seattle, kind of by the Holly area. Aldera is unbelievable. You got to go with those two, probably. Pacific North. I would say Aldera. Like, if you're telling me I got to play somewhere in the Northwest, I'm going to go to all. Also, Cle Elum. There's a property that is unbelievable. But I'm still sticking with Aldera. Got to go out there.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back. So we do these flights where we have kind of topics we do every week. And Max obviously typically is doing most of these because a lot of them are golf specific. But today it's your job. So you've got to do this. I want to start with, did you have a best thing you heard this week? And it doesn't have to be from you or your caddy. It could be from anybody. But do you have a best or a worst thing you heard this week?
So good. You know, this is my notes on my phone. I was kind of nervous about this thing. I've been thinking about it. And I didn't have one. So we're driving to the airport, my wife and I. We're ordering an Uber. And the Uber sees my golf clubs, the Uber driver. And he's like, oh, are you here for golf? I said, yeah. He's like, do you play? And I always downplay. I said, no, I don't play. But I said, yes, because I finished top 10. And I thought, cool. So I said, I admitted I was a golfer. And he couldn't have been a nicer guy. He was unbelievable. But he compared the golf tournament. And he says, having no fans at a major championship. He was a sports fan. He was very knowledgeable. He says, having no fans at a major championship is like having sex without a woman. And I died laughing. Like, I was like, he was super serious. And I was like, did you like come up with this yourself? Like, how good is this?
He was circling, looking for somebody with golf clubs. He's just like, I got to get a golfer. I got this golf joke I got to throw at him.
It was so good. He even said like the NBA and MLB and the whole thing. But man, I was laughing. A major championship without fans is like sex without a woman. And I thought it was the best thing. It was definitely the best thing I heard all week. And maybe a top five of the year for sure.
That would have flown right over Nick Faldo's head, much like the Phil comment that he started with when he was in the booth.
Do you do the best? What was the best thing you heard?
Yeah. I have in general the F-bombs. I can't get enough of the kind of hot mics. And, you know, Scott Van Pelt was the best at reacting to them, where, you know, you get a lot of the announcers that apologize and so sorry you had to hear that, which here's what I've never understood. Who hasn't heard a curse word? Like, what person is truly offended if they hear somebody drop an F-bomb on TV? I mean, I know that people get offended by everything, but like, what? Why does it offend you?
Because their child is watching, and the child has never heard that. This is my from Twitter.
Okay,
I'm pretty good at Twitter. I'm deep into Twitter. Every comment I read is because their child is watching, not because they're offended. But the only reason I've ever heard anybody get mad about a cuss word is because the child is watching.
But okay, I have a kid. He's 14 months old. He's eventually going to get to the point where he's talking more and repeating stuff, and you don't want him to repeat curse words. But again, like, every human, child or otherwise, eventually is going to hear a curse word. Would you rather the kid hear Justin Thomas say it after a missed putt or on the playground? I mean, I just feel like we apologize a lot, and 99.9% of people are like, it's good, we're good. No, you're fine. We hear it all the time.
I did happen to maybe have a small tirade that was caught on camera in Memphis 2 weeks ago. And the love from Twitter was slightly higher than I expected.
It won this award on this podcast that week. It literally was Max's best thing he heard all week, was you flipping out. So was that you were effing the shot? And then I felt like that crept into the world and society and everything. Is that the road we were going down with that one? Because it was, again, these are the things where if a golfer was listening to that and they heard you do that, they'd go, I like this guy, you know?
I got a lot of love on Twitter for sure. I was even par, I think, at the time. No, I was over par. I was over par on Sunday. I was playing better golf than I should have been. So I was at WGC. I'm trying to get in the top 10. I'm trying to pay for a new house, kitchen, you know, that whole game. And we're gonna attack this pin. This is me and this pin. I'm taking it on. I know there's water around it. And I just completely bailed out like a huge pansy. I think it's a good word. And I cussed way too much for no reason. I'm trying to get better about that. I think probably you as a kind of newish dad, you had to catch your words probably. You're like, oh, you didn't realize how much you cuss until you're catching yourself
for
all the
sure
time.
Yeah, and I mean,
I'm trying to be better about it.
And I do, and I will say this, it's more my wife's asking than anybody else, but I don't say bad words in front of my kid. And when I hear bad words, I definitely notice it. Now, I'm not offended by it, but I notice it more now, you know?
Absolutely. And I think the better you play, the more you're on TV and then the more exposed. But, and those guys, I mean, the guys are always on TV, those feature groups. I mean, they're pretty good about it. For a guy who's not there often, and I just let the world have it. I cursed myself first, which is number one. I said, F me. Then I said, F you, which was also to me. And then I think I went with F everybody.
Okay.
And then I probably circled back around to more of me on that. And I think one of the greatest quotes of all time, and I think Max probably stole it because he's a fever of most things, but I think he said a couple weeks ago, he goes, it's okay to be mad at yourself, but it's not okay to be negative.
Yep.
And that is just so, I think that's everything in life. Like you can get super pissed off about everything, and that's allowed for 10, 20, 30 seconds, a minute, whatever it is, but you're not allowed to be negative. And when I heard that, it was like almost like a come to Jesus moment for me. I'm like, man, you could yell about so many things except for being mad at yourself.
Or being negative about yourself. Yeah. I mean, you could be frustrated with the shot, the swing, the putt, the stroke, all that stuff, the decision making, but don't take it any further than where it needs to go. Worst thing I heard this week, and I wrote this down on Saturday, so it's not like I'm piggybacking on a bad round. I personally was not a fan at all of what Koepka said about the leaders and all these guys and not being afraid and they haven't won a lot of majors. You know, I think I was the most offended by the fact that, you know, he went at DJ for only winning one major, which only winning one should not be a phrase. But, you know, Dustin Johnson won a U.S. Open at Oakmont. You know, he won a U.S. Open at arguably the hardest golf course on the planet during a final round where he was battling the field, the golf course, and this rules issue floating around that nobody knew was going on. I mean, that's a lot to take on mentally, and he handled it and played great and hit two of the best shots on the 18th hole in Oakmont history. And on top of that, somebody said to me on Twitter, and I know you'll agree with me on this because you're big on I'll take 20 years on tour over two wins and done, is somebody said, well, he trade all those wins for three more majors. Joel, I went through Dustin Johnson's victories. He's got four victories in the FedEx Cup Finals. He's got six WGC titles. He's won at Riv. He's won at Pebble. Six. He's won at Riv. He's won at Pebble. He's won that Travelers this year with everybody in the field. It's actually more of the elite tournaments that Dustin Johnson's won versus maybe the ho-hummy ones that I guess this guy was trying to say. So anyway, I was... And, you know, I like Brooks Koepka for golf. I think he's great. But I just, you know, you can be the tough, badass guy without dismissing what people have done. I just didn't like the going after the guy's career. You know, I just felt like that was low-hanging fruit.
I think you nailed it. This is the part where I stopped writing my notes.
By the way, I'm impressed you wrote one thing down. That's good. That's what I needed from you.
No, I wrote two.
Okay.
There's one more thing I'll bring up before the end of this. I know we're running along here, but I need standard for Max. So, but I would agree. I think Brooks, it started, I don't know, whatever. He's won four majors and he's good at golf. But somewhere in the middle, he's like, he didn't get respected. The media didn't want to talk to him and this whole deal, right? Then he's like, well, because you're so boring, you don't say anything. Like, what's the point of talking to you? And then he started like opening up and he started like, you know, I don't know, whatever it is, like, I wouldn't say screaming and yelling, but he started opening up and he started talking shit, which I actually really enjoy in the golf world. Like, let's not all like button up our shirt and tuck in our shirt. Like, let's not all like wear our belt perfectly. Like, I kind of enjoy it. But at this point, his stick's a little old. Like, now he's being like almost mean to the media. I'm like, dude, they ask you a question. Like, you don't have to like be a jerk to them to answer it. You can answer it in a not a condescending tone almost. Like, I just hate that.
Right. I totally agree with you. And I just feel like, again, I love what Koepka is for this sport, you know, because he's very unique. I mean, I agree that he's And I wrote a long thing about Bryson. I mean, same thing about Bryson. I think Bryson is good for golf. I mean, he's not everybody's cup of tea, but that's what sport is that you've got a lot of options and you pick the one you want. And then maybe you really, really don't like the other one. And that also brings you back. But I don't like, you know, Dustin Johnson's going to be in the Hall of Fame. You know, I mean, this is not a debate. You know, he's won a major in 21 times on tour and he's going to win 30 times, I would say, on the low end. So to sit there and you know, just diminish his career. I mean, he finished second at the PGA last year, second in the Masters, and he finished second here. I mean, that's 3 second place finishes in majors in the last 5. You know, it's not some chump that does that. So anyway, that was my point. I just didn't love it. I appreciated Rory kind of getting Dustin's back on the wins. And, you know,
I love Rory.
He's just the only Rory, by the way, the only Rory. I love that. That's what we're doing now.
Yeah.
Do you have a toughest decision that you guys had on the week?
Well, I stayed with Hubbard's this last week, Mark and his wife, Megan, and my wife, Lana, and every night. So my favorite thing to do, well, turned into, is to eat like good food. Good food does not mean expensive food. It means like a truck, like go find a truck, especially in San Fran when there's everything available to you from, I don't know, Chinese, Vietnamese, Mexican, American, any and all food. And my wife is, she runs kind of a little bit of a Instagram blog called Travel Eats and Treats. That's a free plug, definitely there. Plug that one in. And she's so good and her food is so good. We just love experiencing kind of the culture and the food and everything to do. And obviously this quarantine and California basically shutting down, we couldn't do that. So every night we sat on the couch, what do you want to eat? And we grab Uber Eats or Grubhub or Postmates, whatever it is. We start scrolling through every night. It took just as long to figure out what we wanted to eat as a group to decide actually what we were getting and for how long it took. So I'd say tough decision, California, is figuring out how to eat in your house with Grubhub or Uber Eats, whatever it is, without being able to go out. And it was frustrating because I love that. I absolutely love experiencing all of it.
So what's your process? Let's just say, you know, it's not a pandemic and places aren't all closed. What's your process when you go to a town for finding and picking out the best places? Are you doing like the week before research? Are you on Yelp? Are you Googling? Like, what is your personal process to finding these either hidden gems or great restaurants?
That's a good question. I am mostly, my wife travels with me 80-90% of the time now. And she is on top of it. Once again, Travel Eats and Treats on Instagram. Unbelievable pictures and food and recipes. And she does it all. So she kind of outsources. She's like asking for all of anybody who's in the area, but also she just kind of like Googles, like, where do you have to eat at? Like for Memphis, like it's barbecue, obviously, but like there's 4 barbecues. Which one do you go to? And it's like you kind of like read reviews and you kind of figure it out. And then, you know, the power of social media, you can kind of dial it into 4 or 5 restaurants for the week. And she locks in reservations. And like I said, it's not always like expensive. It's not like we're going to like Mastro Steakhouse every night. We are a lot, the hole in the walls are the best. The cheaper and the more hole in the wall, typically the better the food. And the more mom and pop it is way better. So, just really enjoy that entire thing of it. So, and my wife mostly takes care of that whole thing. And I'm very, very lucky. And my body fat has skyrocketed in the last couple of years because of that.
So I gotta share a tip, and I've got to give a shout out to my buddy, Kevin Stamler, for sharing this tip with me a couple of months ago. So he and his wife, Emily, who's great, they live in Los Angeles. And they have a game they play for dinner choices, because I feel like we all run into this, right? We all run into issues with picking what are we going to have for dinner, especially if you're on the road and you're not cooking at home. So he calls it the 3-in-1. So somebody every day is either a 3 or the 1. Okay, so you might be the 3 and your wife's the 1. Your job as the 3 is to present to your eating partner, your wife, 3 places, specific places that you want to get dinner from. And then she's got to make the decision on the 1. So you give the options.
So good.
Then they pick that. And here's Kevin's advice to Cindy and I when we started doing this was just around lunchtime every day, you send a text and go, you want to be the 3 or the 1 today? And then that person picks, I'll be the 1. Now it's on you to find 3 spots. they pick the one, boom, all of the debate is out of the window. So I'm sharing that with you and everybody listening, but that is what we've been doing. And I'll tell you this, it makes that whole process a lot less annoying.
I think that you need to yell that to the people in the back. I think that's the cool thing to do. Like on social media now, they say, yell it louder for the people in the back. That is an unbelievable deal. We kind of do it, you know, well, we all are have significant others and it's always difficult to figure out food. You pick. No, you pick. No, you pick. Well, all right, let's do this. No, I don't want that. I'm like, okay, this is the game we aren't going to go down. So you pick three and you pick one. I love, like, and you could do kind of three similar. You could do three completely different things.
For sure.
That way they have every option. And then maybe sometimes, do you ever have a deal where you pick three and maybe she wants Chinese but not Panda Express and she wants maybe like a different one? And she's like, oh, well, I want this, but I want that.
Yeah, you can audible. Yeah. I mean, if you want to get like Sabai Thai and you're and then she wants another Thai place like Maley's and Ulti's. By the way, this is like super Phoenix chatter right now. Like Joel's nodding his head.
Is it Maley's or Miley? I thought it was Miley.
I think it's Maley's.
Because Miley's is the best. Okay, well, whatever it is, it's in like on like third or second in Old Town, right?
Yep. Awesome.
That is the best place in history. No one. Like, I don't eat there enough. Like, now I'm going to probably have there for dinner because it is that good. Well, well done, Shane.
No problem. Best shot you saw this week that you saw, not Morikawa that you didn't see. What's the best shot you saw this week, either by yourself or someone else?
I had so many great shots. I finished, I don't know if people are aware of this, but I finished T10 at the PGA Championship this week at Harding Park. I hit a ton of great golf shots.
You're good.
Probably review the profile and look at those. But Mark Hubbard, my roommate.
Wow. He's getting another vote in this category.
He whacked the ball out of that the ninth hole, which is just comically easy, impossible. He hit it at the bunker off tee, like you're supposed to, not the rough. And he hit a two hybrid from 200. Wrote this down. I asked him all these questions this morning before I left. Let me get this right. 236, I think, is the deal. Hit it right bunker on the ninth hole, 236 yards. It landed about 50 feet short. The wind, it's a back left pin. The wind's off the left. If you miss it left, you're making bogey. And he hit this high cut that just was gorgeous. Landed on the green and rolled in like a putt. I was at home. We were opposite waves. So it was on Friday, I think. He was also outside the cut line at the time. And he hooped it to obviously go inside the cut, and then he birdied 10 and continued momentum on the back. I was watching this thing at home. I go, no frick, like obviously scoring's wrong. Like that's the easy thing to go to. And it was the most beautiful shot I've ever seen. And I think he deserves another shout out. It was so good.
I think we're going to have to start calling this the Mark Hubbard Award because he's been nominated a few times by both you and Max. So that's, we might have to change the title, and I'm okay with that. I'm okay with making the, you know what? You're a co-host to this. Are you okay with it?
I don't know if I'm allowed that quite thing. I mean, tripod co-host. I think that Hubbard deserves a piece of it for
okay.
sure.
Okay.
Definitely running until something happens so great that he gets booted. But I think he deserves a piece for a while.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back. So before I let you go, I just wanted to, at what point on Sunday, Monday, whatever, at what point did it kind of hit you? And I mean, you're in it all week. You're playing the whole thing. You're playing well. You birdie 18 the last day. But at what point were you like, wow, I mean, I can't believe I finished top 10. I mean, I know you're, you know, everybody's trying to win. They're trying to finish as high as they can finish. But top 10 in a major is top 10 in a major. I mean, did you have a moment on Sunday where you were kind of reflecting and like, you know, I mean, 3 or 4 years ago, I'm not sure I would have believed I was at this point.
Yeah, definitely. That's a good one there. I'm so pumped up, especially after the made putt on 18, adrenaline's high. And, you know, you talk to, I had Rob Rochelle and John Rehorn both here. And then obviously chat with my caddy post on the store card. We're kind of like jacked up on Mountain Dew and we're all having fun. And then you kind of go clean out your locker and completely himself, because now you have like three bags, you know, like your shoes and some extra balls and gloves, and you're carrying your bag to your car. And it's just so, I don't know, normal, I would say. Like, you go from like hooping a putt to 10 minutes later, you're cleaning out your locker and you're walking your car like 500 yards away. This bag is so heavy. You have everything in your hand. Like, it's so humbling, so quick. But you like kind of think about like just how great the week was and how well you played and how you kind of like, I mean, I shot 300 on the back nine on Sunday of major. Like, that's pretty good. And I was just kind of like appreciating, and then driving home, you know, I have a 6 minute drive to the house. And I normally like blast the radio when I'm pumped up, but I just turned it off and I just like enjoyed, I don't know. I just thought about how many good par putts I made, or, you know, the putt on 18, like those little things. And that was, I don't know. It's golfers as a whole. I guarantee you, every amateur listening to this thing, when they get off the golf course, they say, oh, I shot 78, but I hit a ball out of bounds.
Right.
I missed this putt. I did that. If every golfer actually reflected on like the five best shots they hit every day, their life would change. Like, they get instantly happier and their golf game would improve so quickly. And I've been trying to do that lately, of just being like, man, I hit a great par putt on 17 and I had a great putt on 18. And that par save on 8 for me was so good. Like, just think about the five best shots and never. I mean, I talk multiple times about ball stuck in a tree this week and a triple on 9, but think about all the other great things I did to finish where I did. So I got to, you just dwell on those things and you think about those things, and life as a golfer is way better.
I can only imagine that when the bad things happen and it ends up being a bad week, it's probably hard to be, you know, thinking, focusing on all the good. But, you know, when you have an epic week, I mean, you know, a career week, really, at a major championship, you know, it's, why wouldn't you sit there and think about good? Why wouldn't you sit there and think about positive? Because if you don't do it then, when the hell are you going to be? You know, it's when you shoot 58, you know, at Mesa, it's like, I played great here, but, you know, it's winning a couple bucks and getting a course record. Now it's, I just qualified for the PGA Championship next year because of the way I played. And also, I want a gob of money, and I'm proving to myself and everybody else that the work and the mentality and the process and the coaches and everything has kind of got me to this point. I mean, that's why I always say we focus so much on the winner every week of a golf event. And there's a lot of winners every week. You know, there's a lot of people that leave very happy for how they finished.
Sometimes I get yelled at because, you know, I finished 20th and I make 85 grand and I'm pumped about it. And people are yelling at me on Twitter, like, oh, you didn't win. I'm like, dude, golf is impossible. Like, this is the hardest game in the world. And if you're the best player in the world, you have like, what, a 5% winning percentage?
Right.
Like, you just don't win. Like, you just don't win. Like, I've kind of hung out with Kevin Stroman recently a little more often. I think he's won twice. He won Travelers, maybe somewhere else, maybe 3 wins. I don't know. How's even better? Ryan Moore. Northwest guy, always looked up to him. He's won 4 or 5 times and he's got 31 million in career earnings, and people almost call him a failure sometimes.
Right.
Like, guys, you get like 20th is really, really good every week. Like, it's not, you're not going to get the fame, you're not going to get glory, you're not going to get the trophies, but we do get like paid for like second and third place and fifth and 19th and 50th, by the way. So, there's like, it's easy. I think Jack said something recently, like, it's easy to become complacent, like, with all the money today. It is. But we also still are super competitive and we want to beat each other's brains in, and we want to win, obviously, because, you know, winning, you get a trophy, but no, you also get the most money. Like, let's really concentrate on like why we're doing this thing. So that's like how it, like, yeah, you get a cool trophy that sits in your office or whatever that no one ever sees, no one ever cares about. But I just think it's a thing that people don't understand. That's okay. Like, we're grinding for 15th and 20th, and that's fun, and that's what matters.
And Max brought up this a couple of podcasts ago about he wishes there was a little bit of a change in how the events were covered, especially the non-major events, where, you know, Friday is kind of cut day, and if you focus on the players battling to make the cut, you're going to see way more drama than focusing on guys that are playing well on Friday that may be near the lead on Sunday. The drama on Friday is the cut. because you make the cut, you make money.
You
don't make the cut, you don't make money. So that is where the fun stuff is, because there's certain putts, you know, I mean, even Max, you know, Max missed the cut this week at the PGA Championship. I'm following along on my computer on Sunday, and he makes a birdie on, I think he birdies 10, and then he made a birdie on like 13 or 14, and he had 16 up ahead. And, you know, I'm sitting there on my computer refreshing, knowing that, you know, 16's a birdie hole and he needs two more to make the cut. You know, that is Friday stress for somebody that cares about the player. You know, I mean, I'm paying attention to what he's doing, and that's why Friday's fun. You know, other than that, Friday's just another day to set yourself up.
So. You got it. And there's always a great story, like Adam Long in Minneapolis. I think he like had to make like a 10-footer for par on 18, and then he parred the hardest on the golf course 9, and then he shot like 63, 64, and lost by like 2. Like he finished second in Minneapolis. Like people have no idea what happened those last 3 holes for him to actually make the cut, and then for him to shoot that number on the weekend and finish second is just unbelievable.
And if Phil Mickelson doesn't make a long birdie putt on the 9th hole on Friday, then we never see him in the booth on Saturday, because he would have definitely not stayed around to do 90 minutes of TV. I can promise you that. If he would have not made the cut on the number, he was not going to hang around for a sit-in on the broadcast, you know?
There are 3 things Phil does well, apparently, is what I learned.
I think that's the perfect out. That's Joel Damon. Hey, by the way, you did great. I really appreciate it. How many White Claws down?
I have 3 finish in front of me and multiple create and a ton last night. So I got 3 through the broadcast was pretty good. Is this a broadcast? I'm going to go on the broadcast.
If you had won the PGA Championship and you were handed the Wanamaker top, hopefully more sturdy on, what do you think would have been the drink out of the Wanamaker of choice of yours?
Fortunately, last night my wife grabbed a takeout from a nice, I guess, steakhouse, and she got me a bottle of wine from 1987, which is when I was born. I've never had wine that old. It was so effing good, and I'm not like a huge wine guy, but man, you go from White Claws to a 1987 bottle of wine. That thing, I would have grabbed, I don't know how many bottles to fill up that Wanamaker.
Wanamaker a decanter? Can this decant? I don't know. Somebody asked somebody at the PGA.
We would have made that thing decant. I guarantee you that. And I don't know what, I wouldn't be home right now. I don't know where I'd probably be sleeping outside at this point, but it would be on. Let's put it out. It wouldn't stop.
I can imagine. Can you tell people where you are on social media and then also plug your wife's Instagram one more time?
Oh, I'm really good at that. Wife's Instagram is Travel Eats and Treat Lana Scott. And I think I'm just Joel Damon on Twitter. Instagram is pretty weak at the moment. I'm not a great picture taker. So I would just say go to Twitter and type in Joel Damon and you'll find me and the Bucket Hat Brigade, and we'll probably yell at each other eventually.
At @Joel_Damon, does not even know his handle. That's okay. It's a typical athlete thing to do. And you are wearing a bucket hat in there and you're verified. So those are the more of the ways you'll be able to find out. And I will say to you before we go that at Shinnecock media, we were there, you know, we're there all week and we had this big meeting, pronunciation meeting, with the, you know, with all the Fox announcers. So, you know, Joe Buck's in there and Zinger and Fax and myself, and I mean the whole crew. And we got to your name and the young man that does, its name's Bernie, and he's probably the best employee we had at Fox. He was unbelievable at his job. He's still unbelievable at his job. But his early week job is to get all these pronunciations from these players that maybe we don't know. And we're in this meeting with 30, 40 people, and your name comes up, and I go, you know, smartly, I go, it's Dahman. It's Joel Dahman. And everybody's like, okay, Dahman. And they're writing it down, Dahman. You know, Joe Buck's writing it down, Zinger, all these people. And I'm as we're going through the names, and Bernie, who again is way smarter and better at this job than I am, Bernie kind of, you could see he was questioning me with his eyes, you know, but he let it go because I'm quote unquote on air talent. And we walk out. I'm like, you know what? I called Homa and I said, Damon or Dahman? And he goes, it's Joel Damon. And everybody was still in the room. Thank goodness. I said, hey, by the way, Bernie was right. It's Joel Damon. So if you would have been called something incorrectly at the U.S. Open, it would have definitely been my fault. So thank goodness Max was around.
Well, I didn't qualify. It's all good.
Yeah, well, there you go. I appreciate I appreciate the time, and I appreciate everything you're doing. You do a great job, you know, kind of supporting great organizations and just being a normal human. So thank you for that, and great playing. It was fun to watch.
Yeah, thank you, Shane. Appreciate that. No, I was honored, honestly, when I got the nod from you and Max. It was I was nervous. I feel like I can do better in the future. There'll be more questions going the other way. But with that being said, you guys do a great job. Obviously, Max is one of my favorite humans, and I can't wait to take the money off you eventually, even with your terrible handicap that is not good for my life.
And we need to do it soon. We will make that work, maybe when it cools off a little bit. That's Joel Damon, everybody. Yeah, follow him absolutely on social media. We'll be back next week. Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.